This is Morning Edition on Rhode Island Public Radio. Time now for our weekly political roundtable. I'm Elizabeth Harrison, sitting in for political reporter Ian Donis. On tap this week, Republican Ken Block's plan to rescue the Rhode Island economy and the outlook for the settlement aimed at ending the lawsuit over the state pension system. Joining us, as he does every week, is Rhode Island Public Radio's political analyst, Scott McKay. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Hi, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And our special guest today, Republican candidate for governor Ken Block. Welcome
Good
to
morning.
The roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
You've just released your vision for boosting Rhode Island's economy, and you're calling for corporate tax cuts and other tax cuts. Ken Block, how much would this cost the state, and how would we pay for it?
That's roughly $60 million, and it's not hard to find that kind of savings in a budget of $8.5 billion. The important question is, why do we do it? We do it because Rhode Island is no longer competitive in our region. We have one of the country's worst economic climates, and we have the country's highest unemployment rate. And unless we begin to deal with these crucial issues and substantively turn our state around, we run the risk of more job losses, not offset by job gains.
You say it's not hard to find these cuts, but where exactly would you look for them?
There's many places. The federal government estimates that 7% of Medicaid dollars are fraudulently or wastefully spent. That represents every 1% in our Medicaid budget represents $20 million. We find less than 0.5%. We have most of our state workers filling out paper-based timesheets. There's a tremendous weekly and annual cost wrapped up in doing things technologically backwards. So there's many places that we can look to find the savings that we need.
Maureen, do you agree that waste and fraud would be enough to find the savings for this plan?
I'm not sure it would be enough. I do applaud your specificity, and I think there are some cases where you make examples, for example, like time cards, that would be easy to implement. My problem is twofold. One, if you were elected governor, you would be a Republican. And how do you expect, as a Republican, to implement some of these things that seem, somewhat obvious?
There's a lot of what I'm talking about doing that's wholly implementable within the executive branch. We don't need legislative approval to make the Department of Labor and Training run better. We don't need the General Assembly to run the Temporary Disability Insurance Fund more professionally. We do need some laws changed to make some necessary changes to unemployment insurance and other things like that. Part of my job is to build a dialogue and respect with the General Assembly, but most importantly, to bring 1,000 business owners in to the General Assembly to help ram home the point that when we have the country's worst unemployment system, that we have to fix it.
You know, this is all well and good, Ken, but you're a guy who's never held any political office, and some of the stuff you put out here, cut the corporate tax rate, sounds good. In fact, Governor Chafee tried to get that through the legislature and didn't. What in your background can you tell voters will show us that we ought to have any confidence in your ability to work in the political realm and get things done?
There's a great many voters who believe that the fact that I have not been corrupted by the system, that I'm not a career politician, is a gigantic positive in this circumstance.
You know, the last guy who said that was Don Carcieri. How did that work out for the voters?
There's a colossal difference between myself and Governor Carcieri. I'm a small business owner. He was the head of a very large business. I'm a detail-oriented person. And what we need right now is we need fresh ideas. We need somebody who's going to pay attention to the details, because everywhere that we find $2, $3, $4, $5 million and we do this 20, 30, 40 times, that adds up to real money, really significant dollar savings, and that's what I'm talking about doing.
It seems like one piece that's missing from this is building coalitions within the legislature. When all is said and done, no matter what happens, if you bring 40,000 business people up there, you've got to create some sort of a working operation with the leadership. That's how this system works.
No question.
How can you do that when so many other people haven't been able to?
We will do it because we go in with open minds. We go in because we know that's what has to be done to get things done.
Turning now to the proposed settlement to end the lawsuit from employee unions over Rhode Island's pension overhaul, unions got a briefing on the deal this week. Scott, what are you hearing about the response from rank-and-file union members?
Well, here's the problem. There is huge discrepancies in the interests of the younger state workers and the retirees. Boy, I'll tell you, if you talk to retirees, they are upset. I think they were expecting to get back more of the cost of living adjustments, some of the stuff they felt they gave up. On the other hand, some of the younger workers, what this deal does is it ensures that the pension system moves towards solvency and there'll be some benefits there.
Now, Ken Block, you're a Republican running for governor. What do you think? Would you approve this deal?
I hope this deal does not get approved until I get in, because I would reject it. I believe that this sort of negotiation in secret without all the stakeholders present is a mistake. We still have a $5 billion unfunded liability inside this fund. We are by no means squared away in terms of what we're doing. I have a real concern that if we approve a settlement, we may be, in fact, cementing the pension obligations as contractual. There's a great many questions I have open about this, and I think it would be a very big mistake for us to proceed ahead with the problems that this settlement leaves lurking right now.
But how would rejecting a settlement affect your efforts to create some voting bloc coalitions within the legislature?
The legislature passed this almost, not unanimously, but by a vast majority. They passed this reform.
But if you want to get your economic plan done and you're governor and you've got the unions against you, what would that mean for you?
The unions have a strong ability to swing Democratic primaries. They're a much lesser force in general elections.
I do agree with you in the sense that I think there's a problem with the legislature. I was up there yesterday. A lot of these legislators are not very happy about this because they think they're being sort of pushed into something that they had no part in. So when you're talking about coalitions, it isn't exactly clear that the coalitions in the legislature are supporting the unions. They're doing this very reluctantly because I think you do make a very good point. If this holds, the worry is every other change in the pension system is not going to be able to be done by statute. It's going to have to be negotiated. If we have anything like this over-year fandango, it will virtually cripple the state when it comes to making progress on these issues.
Look, and the most unfair aspect of this pension mess is my children who were born here. They're 10 years old and 12 years old. They owe $5,000 each in personal liability to the pension system. It's a $5 billion liability. We have a million people here. That's $5,000 for every man, woman, and child in the state. They owe.
Yeah, but they don't.
Well, they don't.
But those liabilities aren't due today. This is 23 years
so
out.
Scott,
let's be real.
So let's pass them on to yet the next generation.
No,
that's
we're
even
not.
Worse.
We have investments.
That's absolutely
How
worse.
How come the bankers don't? Nobody talks about the bankers whose recklessness crashed Wall Street and cost the pension system $3 billion.
That isn't what is really driving the majority of our pension liabilities.
People living forever is what's really driving it.
Well, nonetheless, I mean, I really think that the package is okay in the sense that they're giving away only 5%. My concern is with the process. My
Absolutely.
Concern is what happens down the road if you make this concession and it goes through, what it does. And, you know, legislators really come together when it comes to threatening their authority. And I think that's one of the underlying factors here.
We're running short on time, but turning now to recreational marijuana. Governor Lincoln Chafee said this week he isn't ruling out the idea of legalizing it after seeing the revenue it's generating in Colorado. Ken Block, what do you think?
Colorado is conducting a grand experiment. I think we need to let that experiment proceed. Let's go to school on the lessons that they learn. And at some point down the road, once we know what the impact is, we should consider it. I don't think we should be on the bleeding edge of the decision.
Well, we're out of time, so we'll have to leave it there. Republican candidate for governor, Ken Block, thanks for joining us on Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
Scott McKay, our political analyst, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Maureen Moakley from the University of Rhode Island, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Hamblet Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblet, through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.